Chapter 46. Rope between each knot, and pulling with her hands. One of the knots slipped. Oh, think. It would have broken, but for your forethought, apostrophe Elfride exclaimed apprehensively. She retied the two ends. The rope was now firm in every part. When you have let it down, apostrophe said Knight, already resuming his position of ruling power, go back from the edge of the slope, and over the bank as far as the rope will allow you. Then lean down, and hold the end with both hands. Apostrophe, he had first thought of a safer plan for his own deliverance, but it involved the disadvantage of possibly endangering her life. I have tied it round my waist, apostrophe she cried, and I will lean directly upon the bank, holding with my hands as well. Apostrophe, it was the arrangement he had thought of, but would not suggest. I will raise and drop it three times, when I am behind the bank, apostrophe she continued, to signify that I am ready. Take care, oh, take the greatest care, I beg you. Apostrophe, she dropped the rope over him, to learn how much of its length it would be necessary to expend on that side of the bank, went back, and disappeared as he had done before. The rope was trailing by Knight's shoulders. In a few moments it twitched three times. He waited yet a second or two, then laid hold. The incline of this upper portion of the precipice, to the length only of a few feet, useless to a climber empty-handed, was invaluable now. Not more than half his weight depended entirely on the linen rope. Half a dozen extensions of the arms, alternating with half a dozen seizures of the rope with his feet, brought him up to the level of the soil. He was saved, and by Elfride. He extended his cramped limbs like an awakened sleeper, and sprang over the bank. At sight of him, she leapt to her feet with almost a shriek of joy. Knight's eyes met hers, and with supreme eloquence the glance of each told a long-concealed tale of emotion in that short half-moment. Moved by an impulse neither could resist, they ran together, and into each other's arms. At the moment of embracing, Elfrite's eyes involuntarily flashed towards the puffin steamboat. It had doubled the point, and was no longer to be seen. An overwhelming rush of exultation at having delivered the man she revered from one of the most terrible forms of death, shook the gentle girl to the center of her soul. It merged in a defiance of duty to Stephen, and a total recklessness, as to plighted faith. Every nerve of her will was now in entire subjection to her feeling volition as a guiding power had forsaken her. To remain passive, as she remained now, encircled by his arms, was a sufficiently complete result, a glorious crown to all the years of her life. Perhaps he was only grateful, and did not love her. No matter. It was infinitely more to be even the slave of the greater than the queen of the less. Some such sensation as this, though it was not recognized as a finished thought, raced along the impressionable soul of Elfride. Regarding their attitude, it was impossible for two persons to go nearer to a kiss than went Knight and Elfride during those minutes of impulsive embrace in the pelting rain. Yet they did not kiss. Knight's peculiarity of nature was such that it would not allow him to take advantage of the unguarded and passionate avowal she had tacitly made. Elfride recovered herself and gently struggled to be free. He reluctantly relinquished her and then surveyed her from crown to toe. She seemed as small as an infant. He perceived whence he had obtained the rope. Elfride, my Elfride. Apostrophe, he exclaimed in gratified amazement. I must leave you now, apostrophe, she said, her face doubling its red, with an expression between gladness and shame. You follow me, but at some distance. Apostrophe, the rain and wind pierce you through, the chill will kill you. God bless you for such devotion. Take my coat and put it on. Apostrophe, no, I shall get warm running. Apostrophe, Elfride had absolutely nothing between her and the weather but her exterior robe or costume. Apostrophe, the door had been made upon a woman's wit, and it had found its way out. Behind the bank, Whilst Night reclined upon the dizzy slope waiting for death, as he had taken off her whole clothing, and replaced only her outer bodice and skirt. Every thread of the remainder lay upon the ground in the form of a woolen and cotton rope. I am used to being wet through, apostrophe she added. I have been drenched on Pansy dozens of times. Goodbye till we meet, clothed and in our right minds, by the fireside at home. Apostrophe apostrophe, she then ran off from him through the pelting rain like a hare, or more like a pheasant when, scampering away with a lowered tail, it has a mind to fly, but does not. Elfride was soon out of sight. Night felt uncomfortably wet and chilled, but glowing with fervor nevertheless. He fully appreciated Elfride's girlish delicacy in refusing his escort in the meager habiliments she wore, yet felt that necessary abstraction of herself for a short half-hour as a most grievous loss to him. He gathered up her knotted and twisted plumage of linen, lace, and embroidery work, and laid it across his arm. He noticed on the ground an envelope, limp and wet. In endeavoring to restore this to its proper shape, he loosened from the envelope a piece of paper it had contained, which was seized by the wind in falling from Knight's hand. It was blown to the right, blown to the left, it floated to the edge of the cliff, and over the sea, where it was hurled aloft. It whirled in the air, and then flew back over his head. Knight followed the paper, and secured it. Having done so, he looked to discover if it had been worth securing. The troublesome sheet was a banker's receipt for £200, placed to the credit of Miss Swankert, which the impractical girl had totally forgotten she carried with her. Knight folded it as carefully as its moist condition would allow, put it in his pocket, and followed Elfride. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.